Tonight on Radio Stage, part one of Within the Hollow Crown, a sad story of the death of kings, a radio adaptation of William Shakespeare's Richard II and Henry IV, parts one and two.
Marshal, demand of yonder champion the cause of his arrival here in arms. Ask him his name, and orderly proceed to swear him in the justice of his cause.
In God's name and the king's, say who thou art and why thou comest thus knightly clad in arms. Against what man thou comest, and what thy quarrel? Speak truly on thy knighthood and thy oath, as so defend thee, heaven and thy valor.
My name is Thomas Mowbray, Duke of Norfolk, who hither come engaged by my oath, which God defend and knight should violate, both to defend my loyalty and truth to God, my king, and my succeeding issue against the Duke of Hereford that appeals me, and, by the grace of God and this mine arm, to prove him, in defending of myself, a traitor to my God, my king, and me, and as I truly fight, defend me, heaven.
Marshal, ask yonder knight in arms both who he is and why he cometh hither, thus plated in habiliments of war, and formally, according to our law, depose him in the justice of his cause.
What is thy name, and wherefore comest thou hither before King Richard in his royal lists? Against whom comest thou, and what's thy quarrel? Speak like a true knight, so defend thee, heaven.
Harry of Hereford? Lancaster and Derby am I, who ready here do stand in arms to prove, by God's grace and my body's valor, in lists on Thomas Mowbray, Duke of Norfolk, that he is a traitor, foul and dangerous, to God of heaven, King Richard, and to me. And as I truly fight, defend me, heaven.
Cousin of Hereford, as thy cause is right, so be thy fortune in this royal fight. Farewell, my blood, which if today thou shed, lament we may, but not revenge thee dead.
God in thy good grace make thee prosperous. Be swift like lightning in the execution, and let thy blows, doubly redoubled, fall like amazing thunder on the casque of thy adverse pernicious enemy. Rouse up thy youthful blood, be valiant, and live.
Mine innocence and Saint George to thrive.
However God or fortune cast my lot, there lives or dies, true to King Richard's throne, a loyal, just, and upright gentleman. Never did captive, with a freer heart, cast off his chains of bondage, and embrace his golden, uncontrolled enfranchisement, more than my dancing soul doth celebrate this feast of battle with mine adversary. Most mighty liege, and my companion peers, take from my mouth the wish of happy years. As gentle and as jocund as to jest go I to fight. Truth hath a quiet breast.
Farewell, my lord. Securely I espy virtue with valor couched in thine eye. Order the trial, marshal, and begin.
Sound trumpets, and set forward combatants.
This is London.
Stay! The king hath thrown his warder down.
Draw near, and list what with our counsel we have done, for that our kingdom's earth should not be soiled with that dear blood which it hath fostered, and for our eyes do hate the dire aspect of civil wounds ploughed up with neighbor's sword, and for we think the eagle-winged pride of sky-aspiring and ambitious thoughts with rival-hating envy set on you to wake our peace and make us wade even in our kindred's blood. Therefore, we banish you our territories. You, cousin Hereford, upon pain of life, till twice 5 summers have enriched our fields, shall not regreet our fair dominions, but tread the stranger paths of banishment.
Your will be done. This must my comfort be. That sun that warms you here shall shine on me, and those his golden beams to you here lent shall point on me and gild my banishment.
Norfolk, for thee remains a heavier doom, which I with some unwillingness pronounce. The sly, slow hours shall not determine the dateless limit of thy dear exile. The hopeless word of never to return, breathe I against thee upon pain of life.
A heavy sentence, my most sovereign liege, and all unlooked for from your highness's mouth.
It boots thee not to be compassionate. After our sentence, plaining comes too late.
Then thus I turn me from my country's light, to dwell in solemn shades of endless night.
Uncle, even in the glasses of thine eye I see thy grieved heart. Thy sad aspect hath from the number of his banished years plucked four away. 6 frozen winters spent, return with welcome home from banishment.
I thank my liege that in regard of me he shortens 4 years of my son's exile, but little vantage shall I reap thereby. For ere the 6 years that he hath to spend can change their moons and bring their times about, my oil-dried lamp and time-be-wasted light shall be extinct with age and endless night. My inch of taper will be burnt and done in blindfold death. Not let me see my son.
Thy son is banished upon good advice, whereto thy tongue a party verdict gave. Why at our justice seems thou then to lower?
Things sweet to taste prove indigestion sour. You urged me as a judge, but I had rather you would have bid me argue like a father.
Cousin, farewell, and uncle bid him so. 6 years we banish him, and he shall go. What said our cousin when you parted with him?
Farewell. And for my heart disdained that my tongue should so profane the word, that taught me craft to counterfeit oppression of such grief that words seem buried in my sorrow's grave. Mary, would the word farewell have lengthened hours and added years to his short banishment, he should have had a volume of farewells. But since it would not, he had none of me.
He is our cousin, cousin. But 'tis doubt when time shall call him home from banishment, whether our kinsmen come to see his friends. Ourself and Bushy, Baggett here and Green, observed his courtship to the common people. How he did seem to dive into their hearts with humble and familiar courtesy, as 'twere to banish their effects with him. Off goes his bonnet to an oyster wench. A brace of draymen bid Godspeed him well, and had the tribute of his supple knee with thanks, my countrymen, my loving friends, as were our England in reverse in his, and he our subjects next degree in hope.
Well, he is gone, and with him go these thoughts. Now for the rebels which stand out in Ireland. Expedient manage must be made, my liege, ere further leisure yield them further means for their advantage and your highness's loss.
We will ourself in person to this war. And for our coffers, with too great a court and liberal largesse are grown somewhat light, we are enforced to farm our royal realm, the revenue whereof shall furnish us for our affairs in hand. If that come short, our substitutes at home shall have blank charters, whereto, when they shall know what men are rich, they shall subscribe them for large sums of gold and send them after to supply our wants. For we will make for Ireland presently. What news?
Old John of Gaunt is grievous sick, my lord.
Where lies he?
At Ely House.
Now put it God in the physician's mind to help him to his grave immediately. The lining of his coffers shall make coats to deck our soldiers for these Irish wars. Come, gentlemen, let's all go visit him. Pray God we may make haste and come too late.
Amen.
Will the king come that I may breathe my last in wholesome counsel to his unstayed youth?
Vex not yourself, nor strive not with your breath. For all in vain comes counsel to his ear.
Oh, but they say the tongues of dying men enforce attention like deep harmony. More are men's ends marked than their lives before. The setting sun and the music at the close, as the last taste of sweets is sweetest last. Though Richard my life's counsel would not hear, my death's sad tale may yet undeaf his ear.
The king is come. Deal mildly with his youth, for young hot colts being raged do rage the more.
What comfort, man? How is it with aged Gaunt?
Now he that made me knows I see thee ill. Ill in myself to see, and in thee seeing ill. Thy deathbed is no lesser than thy land, wherein thou liest in reputation sick, and thou, too careless patient as thou art, committest thy anointed body to the cure of those physicians that wounded thee. A thousand flatterers sit within thy crown, whose compass is no bigger than thy head, and yet encaged in so small a verge, the waste is no whit lesser than thy land. Why, cousin, wert thou regent of the world, it were a shame to let this land by lease. But for thy world enjoying but this land, it is not more than shame to shame it so. Landlord of England thou art now, not king. Thy state of law is bondslave to the law, and thou art...
Lunatic, lean-witted fool, presuming on an ague's privilege. Wert thou not brother to great Edward's son? This tongue that runs so roundly in thy head should run thy head from thy irreverent shoulders.
Oh, spare me not, my brother Edward's son. For that I was his father, Edward's son. That blood already, like the pelican, hast thou tapped out and drunkenly caroused. Convey me to my bed, then to my grave. Love they to live that love and honor have.
And let them die that age and sullens have. For both hast thou, and both become the grave.
I do beseech your majesty, impute his words to wayward sickliness and age in him. He loves you on my life, and holds you dear as Harry Duke of Hereford, were he here.
My liege, old Gaunt commends him to your majesty.
What says he?
Nay, nothing. All is said. His tongue is now a stringless instrument. Words, life, and all, old Lancaster has spent.
The ripest fruit first falls, and so doth he. His time is spent. Our pilgrimage must be. So much for that. Now for our Irish wards. We must supplant those rough, rug-headed kerns, and for these great affairs do ask some charge. Towards our assistance we do seize to us the plate, coin, revenues, and movables whereof our uncle Gaunt did stand possessed.
Be York the next that must be bankrupt so. Though death be poor, it ends a mortal woe.
Why, uncle, what's the matter?
Seek you to seize and grip into your hands the royalties and rights of banished Hereford? Is not Gaunt dead, and doth not Hereford live? Well, take Hereford's rights away, and take from time his charters and his customary rights. Let not tomorrow then ensue today, be not thyself, for how art thou a king but by fair sequence and succession? Now, afore God, God forbid I say true, if you do wrongfully seize Hereford's rights, you pluck a thousand dangers on your head, you lose a thousand well-disposed hearts, and prick my tender patience to those thoughts which honor and allegiance cannot think.
Think what you will. We seize into our hands his plate, his goods, his money, and his lands.
God deliver us from evil. God deliver us from evil. God deliver us from evil. God deliver us from evil.
How far is it, my lord, to Berkeley now?
There stands the castle, by yon tuft of trees. Manned with 300 men, as I have heard, and in it are the lords of York, Armurel, and Seymour. It is my lord of Armurel, as I guess.
My lord of Hereford, my message is to you.
My lord, my answer is to Lancaster, and I am come to seek that name in England, and I must find that title in your tongue before I make reply to aught you say.
To you, my lord, I come what lord you will, from the most gracious regent of this land. The Duke of York, to know what pricks you on, to take advantage of the absent time, and fright our native peace with self-borne arms.
I shall not need transport my words by you. Here comes his grace in person, my noble uncle.
Show me thy humble heart, and not thy knee, whose duty is deceivable and false.
My gracious uncle.
Hold! Grace me no grace, nor uncle me no uncle. I am no traitor's uncle. and that word grace in an ungracious mouth is but profane. Why have those banished and forbidden legs dared once to touch a dust of England's ground? Comest thou because the anointed king is hence? Why, foolish boy, the king is left behind, and in my loyal bosom lies his power. Were I but now the lord of such hot youth as when brave Gaunt, thy father, and myself rescued the Black Prince, that young Mars of men, from forth the ranks of many thousand French, oh, then how quickly should this arm of mine, now prisoner to the palsy, chastise thee, and minister correction to thy fault.
Gracious uncle, let me know my fault. On what condition stands it, and wherein?
Even in condition of the worst degree, in gross rebellion and detested treason. Thou art a banished man, and here art come before the expiration of thy time, in braving arms against thy sovereign.
As I was banished Hereford. But as I come for Lancaster. If that my cousin king be king of England, it must be granted I am Duke of Lancaster. You have a son, O'Merle, my noble cousin. Had you first died and he been thus trod down, he should have found his uncle Gaunt a father to rouse his wrongs and chase them to the bay. What would you have me do? I am a subject and I challenge law. Attorneys are denied me, and therefore, personally, I lay my claim to my inheritance of free descent.
Well, well, I see the issue of these arms. I cannot mend it, I must needs confess, because my power is weak and all ill left. But if I could, by him that gave me life, I would attach you all and make you stoop unto the sovereign mercy of the king, for I am loath to break our country's laws. But since I cannot, be it known unto you, I do remain as neuter. So fare you well. Things past redress are now with me past care.
Castle, call they this at hand?
Yea, my lord. How brooks your grace the air after your late tossing on the breaking seas?
Needs must I like it well. I weep for joy to stand upon my kingdom once again. Dear earth, I do salute thee with my hand. The rebels wound thee with their horses' hoofs. Feed not thy sovereign's foe, my gentle earth, nor with thy sweets comfort his ravenous sense. But let thy spiders, that suck up thy venom, and heavy-gated toads lie in their way, doing annoyance to the treacherous feet which with usurping steps do trample thee. Mock not my senseless conjurations, lords. This earth shall have a feeling, and these stones proved armed soldiers, ere her native king shall falter under foul rebellion's arms.
Fear not, my lord. The power that made you king hath power to keep you king in spite of all. The means that heavens yield must be embraced and not neglected, else heaven would, and we will not.
Discomfortable cousin, knowest thou not that when the searching eye of heaven is hid behind the globe that lights the lower world, then thieves and robbers range abroad unseen, in murders and in outrage boldly here. But when from under this terrestrial ball he fires the proud tops of the eastern pines, then murders, treasons, and detested sins, the cloak of night being plucked from off their backs, stand bare and naked, trembling at themselves? So when this thief, this traitor, Bolingbroke, shall see us rising in our throne, the East, his treasons will sit blushing in his face, not able to endure the sight of day, but self-affrighted tremble at his sin. Not all the water in the rough, rude sea can wash the balm off from an anointed king. The breath of worldly men cannot depose the deputy elected by the Lord. For every man that Bolingbroke hath pressed to lift shrewd steel against our golden crown, God, for his Richard, hath in heavenly pay a glorious angel. High be our thoughts! I know my Uncle York hath power enough to serve our turn.
My tongue hath but a heavier tale to say.
I play the torturer by small and small to lengthen out the worst that must be spoken. Your Uncle York is joined with Bolingbroke, and all your northern castles yielded up, and all your southern gentlemen in arms upon his party.
Thou hast said enough.
Of comfort no man speak. Let's talk of graves, of worms and epitaphs. Make dust our paper, and with rainy eyes write sorrow on the bosom of the earth. Let's choose executors and talk of wills, and yet not so. For what can we bequeath save our deposed bodies to the ground? For God's sake, let us sit upon the ground and tell sad stories of the death of kings. How some have been deposed, some slain in war, some haunted by the ghosts they have deposed, some poisoned by their wives, some sleeping killed, all murdered. For within the hollow crown that rounds the mortal temples of a king keeps death his court, and there the antic sits, scoffing his state and grinning at his pomp, allowing him a breath, a little scene to monarchize, be feared, and kill with looks, infusing him with self and vain conceit, as if this flesh which walls about our life were brass impregnable. And humor thus comes at the last, and with a little pin bores through his castle wall. And farewell, king. Cover your heads, and mock not flesh and blood with solemn reverence. Throw away aspect, tradition, form, and ceremonious duty. For you have but mistook me all this while. I live with bread like you. Feel want. Taste grief. Need friends. Subjected thus, how can you say to me I am a king?
My liege, one word.
He does me double wrong that wounds me with the flatteries of his tongue. Discharge my followers. Let them hence away from Richard's night to Bolingbroke's fair day.
The news is very fair and good, my lord. Richard, not far from hence, hath hit his head.
It would beseem the Lord Northumberland to say King Richard. Alack the heavy day when such a sacred king should hide his head.
Your grace mistakes. Only to be brief left I his title out.
The time hath been. Would you have been so brief with him, he would have been so brief with you to shorten you for taking so the head, your whole head's length.
Mistake not, uncle, further than you should.
Take not, good cousin, further than you should, lest you mistake the heavens are over our heads.
I know it, uncle, and oppose not myself against their will. But who comes here? Welcome, Harry. What? Will not this castle yield?
The castle royally is manned, my lord, against thy entrance.
Noble lords, go to the rude ribs of that ancient castle. Through brazen trumpets send the breath of parley into his ruined ears, and thus deliver. Henry Bolingbroke, on both his knees, doth kiss King Richard's hand, and sends allegiance and true faith of heart to his most royal person, hither come even at his feet to lay my arms in power. Provided that my banishment repealed and lands restored again be freely granted. If not, I'll use the advantage of my power and lay the summer's dust with showers of blood, rain from the wounds of slaughtered Englishmen, the which, how far off from the mind of Bolingbroke it is, such crimson tempest should bedrench the fresh green lap of fair King Richard's land, my stooping duty tenderly shall show. Let's march without the noise of threatening drum, that from this castle's tottering battlements our fair appointments should be well proved. Methinks King Richard and myself should meet with no less terror than the elements of fire and water.
See, King Richard doth himself appear. Yet looks he like a king.
Behold his eye, as bright as is the eagle's, lightens forth controlling majesty. Alack, alack for woe that any harm should stain so fair a show.
We are amazed, Northumberland, and thus long have we stood to watch the fearful bending of thy knee, because we thought ourselves thy lawful king. And if we be, how dare thy joints forget to pay their awful duty to our presence? If we be not, show us the hand of God that hath dismissed us from our stewardship. For well we know, no hand of blood and bone can grip the sacred handle of our scepter unless he do profane, steal, or usurp. And though you think that all, as you have done, have torn their souls by turning them from us, yet know, my master, God omnipotent, is mustering in his clouds on our behalf armies of pestilence, and they shall strike your children yet unborn and unbegot. Tell Bolingbroke, for yon methinks he stands, that every stride he makes upon my land is dangerous treason. He is come to open the purple testament of bleeding war, but ere the crown he looks for live in peace, 10,000 bloody crowns of mother's sons shall ill become the flower of England's face.
The King of Heaven forbid our Lord the King should so with civil and uncivil arms be rushed upon. Thy thrice noble cousin Harry Bolingbroke doth humbly kiss thy hand, and by the honourable tomb he swears his coming hither hath no further scope than for his lineal royalties, and to beg enfranchisement immediate on his knees.
Northumberland, say thus the king returns. His noble cousin is right welcome hither, and all the number of his fair demands shall be accomplished without contradiction. What must the king do now? Must he submit? The king shall do it. Must he be deposed? The king shall be contented. Must he lose the name of king? A God's name, let it go. I'll give my jewels for a set of beads, my gorgeous palace for a hermitage, my gay apparel for an almsman's gown, my figured goblets for a dish of wood, my scepter for a palmer's walking staff, my subjects for a pair of carved saints, and my large kingdom for a little grave. Oh, Merrill, thou weep'st, my tender-hearted cousin. We'll make foul weather with despised tears. Our sighs and they shall lodge the summer corn and make a dearth in this revolting land. Would not this ill do well? Well, well, I see I talk but idly and you laugh at me. Most mighty prince, my lord Northumberland, what says King Bolingbroke? Will his majesty give Richard leave to live till Richard die?
My lord, in the base court he doth attend to speak with you. May it please you to come down.
Down, down I come like glistening phaethon, wanting the manage of unruly jades.
Stand all apart, and show fair duty to his majesty. My gracious lord.
Fair cousin, you do debase your princely knee to make the base earth proud with kissing it.
My gracious lord, I come but for mine own.
Your own is yours, and I am yours and all.
Great Duke of Lancaster, I come to thee from plume-plucked Richard, who with willing soul adopts the heir, and his high scepter yields to the possession of thy royal hand. Ascend his throne, descending now from him, and long live Henry, fourth of that name.
In God's name, I'll ascend the regal throne. Fetch hither Richard, that in common view he may surrender, so we shall proceed without suspicion.
I will be his conduct.
Alack, why am I sent for to a king before I have shook off the regal thoughts wherewith I reigned? I hardly yet have learned to insinuate, flatter, bow, and bend my knee. God save the king. Will no man say amen? Am I both priest and clerk? Well then, amen. To do what service am I sent for today?
To do that office of thine own good will, which tired majesty did make thee offer. The resignation of thy state and crown to Henry Bolingbroke.
Give me the crown. Here, cousin, seize the crown.
I thought you had been willing to resign.
My crown I am, but still my griefs are mine.
Part of your cares you give me with your crown.
Your cares set up do not pluck my cares down.
Are you contented to resign the crown?
Aye. No, no. Aye. For I must nothing be. Therefore, no, no. For I resign to thee. Now mark me how I will undo myself. I give this heavy weight from off my head and this unwieldy scepter from my hand, the pride of kingly sway from out my heart. With mine own tears I wash away my bone. With mine own hands I give away my crown. With mine own tongue deny my sacred state. With mine own breath release all duteous oaths. God save King Henry, unking Richard says, and sent him many years of sunshine days. What more remains?
No more. But that you read these accusations and these grievous crimes committed by your person and your followers against the state and profit of this land.
Must I do so? And must I ravel out my weaved-up follies? Gentle Northumberland, if thy offenses were upon record, would it not shame thee in so fair a troop to read a lecture of them? Mine eyes are full of tears I cannot see. Good king, great king, and yet not greatly good. And if my word be sterling yet in England, let it command a mirror hither straight, that it may show me what a face I have, since it is bankrupt of his majesty.
Go some of you and fetch a looking glass.
Read o'er this paper while the glass doth come.
Fiend, thou torments me ere I come to help.
Urge it no more, my lord Northumberland.
The commons will not then be satisfied.
Give me that glass! And therein will I read. No deeper wrinkles here. Hath sorrow struck so many blows upon this face of mine and made no deeper wounds? Oh, flattering glass, thou dost beguile me. Was this the face that every day under his household roof did keep 10,000 men? Was this the face that, like the sun, did make beholders wink? A brittle glory shineth in this face. As brittle as the glory is this face, for there it is, cracked in 100 shivers. Mark, silent king, the moral of this sport. How soon my sorrow hath destroyed my face.
The shadow of your sorrow hath destroyed the shadow of your face. Go, some of you. Convey him to the tower.
Oh, good! Convey! Conveyors are you all that thus rise nimbly by a true king's fall.
On Wednesday next, we solemnly proclaim our coronation. Lords, be ready all.
Listening to part one of of Within the Hollow Crown, a sad story of the death of kings, an adaptation of William Shakespeare's Richard II and Henry IV, parts 1 and 2. Within the Hollow Crown was adapted for radio and produced by Dan O'Donnell and directed by Ralph Janikas. The voice coach was Ellen Gould and production assistant Mary Feely. Appearing in tonight's show were Nick Bolden, Dave Burgess, John Houston, Paul McCulloch, Dan Zukovic, and Ralph Janikas. Here are some highlights from the concluding episode of Within the Hollow Crown.